Welcome to the Computer Repair Podcast, episode number 258, How Much is Too Much? I'm your host, Jeff Dalish. This is our live call-in show for Computer Repair Tech. We answer your questions on running your computer repair business. Call-in number is 1-888-697-0162. Computer Repair Podcast is brought to you by Ninja, the simple-to-use remote monitoring and management solution. Try it free at ninjarmm.com/10off. And also by Kabuto, the lightweight RMM solution created for residential MSP businesses. Get your free 30-day trial at repairtechsolutions.com/Kabuto. Let me introduce the co-hosts. We have John Dubinsky from the Maven Group. How are you doing, John?
I'm doing great, Jeff. Happy Thanksgiving to everybody. Well, I should say happy to Thanksgiving everybody in the U.S.
That's right.
Perhaps happy Boxing Day or whatever it is in Canada. But, you know, my daughter came up to me and said, Dad, you know, are we going to be able to have more than ramen noodles for Thanksgiving? And I said, honey, as long as everybody goes to patreon.com/podnuts, be okay.
Awesome. And also back from I don't know where, we have Chris Crothers from Remote Support Tech Team. How are you doing, Chris?
It's snowing in Canada, man. Seriously,
what else is
snow
new?
Everywhere. I don't know what to do about this.
Good to have you back, Chris.
Good to be here, man.
All right, and also we have a newcomer, Paul Keyes from Keyes Computer Services. How you doing, Paul?
How you doing, Jeff? I am happy as I can be. It's sunny in Northeast Ohio. It doesn't get much better than that.
There you go. Can't complain about that. All right, so let's go ahead, and we're going to share a few personal tips, and then we'll move on into our main topic. John, since you love to kick it off, man, go ahead and give us something to think about.
Hey, bring the heat. First tip is a software program that I reused that I think I brought up, probably distant past, is User Profile Wizard. I don't know if everybody has used that before, from Forensic IT. But I just had to migrate a bunch of profiles from a very poorly set up domain network. So Forensic, User Profile Wizard version 3.12 made the process about a 10-second process just to get everybody off the old domain, move all that over to a local workgroup profile, and then shoot everybody back over to the new server setup. So I'll have a link to that in the show notes, of course, as I always do. So that is User Profile Wizard from Forensic IT. And the other thing is I want to give a shout out to Paul Joyner over at SysAdmin Today podcast. Paul took the time to give me a very robust answer to a question I had about Malwarebytes because he is using that in his organization. So that was great. Thanks, Paul. And you are correct. It is ASIS. Not ASIS. ASIS. Thanks, Paul.
That's awesome. All right. And Chris, what do you got for us this week?
Oh, I couldn't have fast enough. I'm still posting the link up. So big thing that I want to say this week is, you know, we're coming into the Christmas time and a lot of people really start focusing on sale. But something that we really need to focus on is, it's going to sound a little weird, but resale. Mainly, you know, all these people that are getting these new computers, maybe they have a laptop that are 3 or 4 years old, desktop that are 3 or 4 years old. They want to upgrade to a new one. I have been providing free data destruction services because I'm wiping drives, replacing the drives and refurbishing them out. So rather than charging people to do that with the expectation that that machine now belongs to me, I've been refurbishing them and getting ready to resell them now that we're coming into the Christmas season. For people who are looking for something, an upgrade for what they have, but maybe they can't afford a new system.
Oh, that's awesome. Great to think about. I know there's computer repair businesses out there that will get those, sometimes those older computers, and they'll put them together and give them to people maybe that maybe can't afford them or at a low cost like you're doing, Chris. So that's great.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay. And then Paul, and I don't want to put you on the spot, so if you don't have anything, that's fine. But I wanted to give you the opportunity, if you have a personal tip or something that you use in your business. And everybody will understand here shortly why Paul is here to grace our presence.
Boy, if I had a dime every time I heard that. Why are you here? Anyhow, I actually do have a little bit of a tip. It's kind of reiterating a tip I get from John and from Chris and even from you occasionally. Use your calendar.
Mm.
2 weeks ago, I brought my first child home from the hospital, She just left about 20 minutes ago. She's a junior at West Virginia University. It moves very quickly. If it's not on your calendar, it doesn't happen. Use it, use it, use it. I use it personally and in business. I'm finding a lot of things that I've lost track of business-wise if you don't write it down. So use the calendar.
That's good. And which calendar are you using, Paul?
It's a LegalPad.
There you go.
It doesn't get suffer from EMP issues. The difficulty is finding it. And of course, searchability is a bear.
You and Jeff are going to be best friends.
You know, if we want to tech that up, see, because we have to do that, they do have those little locator alarms that you can hook onto your keys so that when you don't find the pad, you hit a button and it beeps.
Oh, there you go.
The tracker or something.
Yeah. I can't remember what it's called. I'll have to find it for the show notes.
Well, honestly, part of this whole thing is figuring out some directions as far as ticketing systems and calendaring and that sort of thing.
Gotcha. Yeah, you know what? I will say this. I still find it easier if I'm taking a quick note to have a pad of paper and a pen on my desk, or even a pencil, to write a quick note down, and then I'll transfer into a digital document later. But it's still easier than...
Let's fight it about that. It is easier. I agree with you 100%. But the bad thing is I find myself, if I don't get it into somewhere electronically and attach it, I often find that piece of paper 2 weeks later and get right on that then.
Later doesn't come.
It's true, except that mine is right center in front of my desk. So I usually, when I'm jotting notes down, when I transfer it, I tear that piece of paper off and get rid of it, and then it's ready for another quick note. So I actually do transfer mine, John. You know, not all of us are lazy.
Some of us are, though.
There goes your Christmas present. You hear that flushing sound?
Right down the toilet. All right. No, that's a good point.
So I guess basically my point is I'm trying to get in the habit where I just make sure I just put it in where it needs to be the first time.
And I don't disagree with you, because I would love to have that ability. And I think when I get to the point where I don't feel stupid talking to my phone, the easiest thing probably to do would be to open up something like Google Keep, hit the microphone button, and just speak into it. But I'm sorry. It's like all those idiots that walk around with Bluetooth in their ear, you know, for the past however many years. And they look really dumb talking to themselves, and you're not sure if they're talking to themselves or the pigeons in the pond, or, well, I don't know. So for me...
The pigeons in the pond?
Well, you know, it's whatever.
Isn't that a song?
But that probably is the best thing to do. And then you've got it there. It's there electronically, and you can always fix it at a later time. So I don't know. It's still, when I'm at my desk, though, it's easier to grab a piece of paper and a pen and just write it down. I don't know why. Maybe it's because I'm old. That could be.
Easy with the old.
Yeah.
I will go back and say that I'm with John, and if it doesn't get written down electronically pretty quickly, it usually doesn't happen. I too am finding things 2, 3, 4 weeks later. Somebody will call me back and say, "Hey, do you remember?" Yeah, I do. Let me go dig that out. Not good.
No, it's definitely not. All right, let's take a quick break, and then we'll move into our main topic, which is why Paul is here. All right, our show today is brought to you by Ninja, the remote monitoring and management solution. Help you become more efficient, more productive, and more profitable. With Ninja, you can have a faster fixed response time and offer preventative maintenance to your customers. Ninja understands what you need to run your business, which is why their RMM solution is integrated with tools you use every day. Ninja provides competitive pricing, patch management, antivirus, email, SMS alerting. You can be up and running quickly with minimum training time. You have TeamViewer integration for that remote support. It's one solution for managed and non-managed clients alike. You also have network visibility inside the RMM. Easy to read dashboards, which I really like. A powerful device search where you can create custom queries and export the list to show your customers. And also an executive style report showing important system metrics such as health score, software added or removed, hardware changes, and team viewer connections. Ninja is offering Podnuts a free 30-day trial, and when you decide to buy, a 10% discount. Take advantage of this offer. Go to ninjarmm.com/10off. All right. So today, Paul has sent John an email, and I don't know, this was probably maybe a month ago or so, and John and Paul have had correspondence back and forth about this email. And one of the things that Paul had brought up was he was looking to maybe do some onboarding of a local machine shop in his area. And he had some questions about that of what to do. So let's go ahead and, Paul, can you paint the scenario of what you're looking at and then maybe some of the questions that you have, and we will try to answer them to the best of our ability.
Very good. Quick background, I've been playing with computers for fun and profit, mostly for fun, for, I don't know, probably 25 years or so. And I'm mostly break fix. Mostly I'm dealing with the onesie twosie little shops, maybe a lawyer that's got two or three computers or a doctor that's got four or five machines. And I've stumbled into an opportunity to take over a machine shop that's sort of an IT train wreck, frankly. They've gotten up to a pretty good size over the last 40 or 50 years, doing exactly what most small businesses do. The guy that can spell computer becomes their IT guy. They do what they can with what they have. They take one of the smartest guys in the room, and next thing you know, they're $15 million in on sales. Life is good, and they have no idea what a domain is, how to work, any standardization, any of that jazz. So my question came into from somebody that does this on a daily basis, John, Chris on a white label, and probably a regular basis through Carruthers. And I'm not sure. I think you still handle mostly very small outfits and individuals.
Correct.
But mostly the other two gentlemen, how do you kind of start this coming from a little teeny tiny shop? Do you just walk in and say, look, you guys have a train wreck, I can fix it? What kind of pricing do you look at? Do you sort of sneak your way in? There's some politics. There's a bunch of other things that should come out during this conversation, but that's kind of the long and short of it, is how do you jump in from a break fix shop with onesie twosies to 50 machines that are scattered over four or five sites as a maintenance plan type program?
Without any previous experience doing any of that?
Not on more than maybe four machines at a time. So yeah, I'm familiar with things like Ninja MSP. I've got a little trial account. I've got Komodo as a trial account. Repair Shopper. I haven't really found a niche as far as these things go. But the big thing is, at some point, I can manually do all the stuff, but it's going to make me absolutely crazy, and it's going to cost them a fortune when you start talking time and materials for, 50, 100 machines. There's got to be a smart way to bring this on board.
Well, let's start with the big question, I think, first. If you're in the position where this might be your first client of this size, I think the first decision you need to make is it something you want to do? Because it kind of changes the game a little bit. If you're dealing with an organization that big, at least in my opinion, it's going to change the way you need to respond to their needs. Meaning, if they're a $20 million company with 130 employees and their primary server is down, so they're not cutting any material and all that, you're going to need to be there pretty quick, I would imagine. I don't know how they handle that now. That's kind of an assumption on my end, but that's probably right around my typical business size, maybe on the larger end with 130 employees, but they don't have as many computers. So, 80, 90 computers usually for me. But, that's the first question I would ask. And if you're all in, that's great. The next question I would ask is, do I have the skills to do it on my own? And I wouldn't, if the answer to that question is no, I wouldn't let that stop me. But then I would my next thing I would do is be knocking on a couple of doors and maybe some Podnuts friends to say, hey, I don't have the proficiency in my tool bag right now to handle X, Y, and Z, but I can partner and get that done. So those are the two things that I would cover first. Those would be the first things that I would look at if we were going to start way back at the beginning. But let's assume those two things are true for the sake of our conversation, meaning Yes, we definitely want to do this. We want to get some growth, and this is the way we think we can get on board. And two, the second thing is, you know, I've got some partners or something that can maybe CYA me if I get in too deep. Chris, you agree or anything to add to that? Jeff?
I definitely have things to add, but honestly, John, I was struggling with how to say the things that you said at the beginning there. So thank you for that, because it's entirely true. If you're not prepared for a contract like that, that is a very quick way to get your name on the whatever list somebody has of companies not to deal with. Because the last thing you want to do is put another company under or very having serious financial repercussions from not being able to support a company properly. That said, you know, if you know that you can provide the support, or if you've partnered with people that can give you those backups so that collectively you can provide that support. For me, the next questions start to come into, you know, prioritizing what work should get done first and finding out what their annual IT budget is or what their quarterly IT budget is so that we can plan everything out. You know, for me, I want to have a course of action laid out over the course, hopefully of just a year, but if we have to push it, then we'll figure it out. All right, this is the equipment that we need to replace. These VPN, you know, this VPN setup is like, you shouldn't be using OpenVPN as a big thing. Let's get some actual, you know, VPN routers in here. So, you know, you really need to start prioritizing and saying, look, it's going to cost this much to fix everything. This is what your budget is. So over the next 6 months, I want to tackle these projects, then I want to tackle this, and kind of make your way down the list. And for me, if I have a company turn around and say, we're not willing to do that, then I'm not willing to work with them. And that's going to end the relationship right there.
Those are the key decisions to make. But the first thing I would want to know are, what are the key items to make those decisions based on? I want to walk in and what runs the business? What, you know, like one of my customers or my satellite customers actually makes beer. So my idea of IT is what gets the beer on the trucks. You know, that's what IT should be doing. Getting the beer on the trucks, either helping it sell, pay the employees, or manage production. So my questions would be is, what's running the business on the IT? What are the key things? What are we using for MRP? What are we using for payroll and accounting? You know, identify the key systems. Yeah. And then I think you step right into what Chris says, meaning what do we need to do to make those key systems just function as they are now? I wouldn't even totally worry about improvements, you know, maybe focus more on the right, easy, quick fix pain points / your management of those devices and those programs. And I think we can get into some tool recommendations at the end of this. And we've talked a little bit before in past shows about doing an initial inventory with a customer. And that would be a good podcast to go back and review if you were going to do that. You know, like finding out what's on the network, finding out what equipment they're using now, finding out if they do have some VPNs and all that set up, find out what their server infrastructure is. I think, Paul, you told us they've got server 2008 right now. So at least they're not totally ancient, but find out how they're utilizing that, find out where they're hosting their websites, how they're doing their email, you know, primary things for communication. You know, are they just simply using basic email, or do they have some sort of SharePoint set up on that server or something like that? And then maybe the last thing I would look at is how they're communicating with their vendors. Are there special needs there? Because what you don't want to do is come into any business, no matter the size, and interrupt their business. So we want to maintain their business, at least the point they're at now, and then improve it as we move forward with IT.
So before we move on, let me go ahead, and because as I'm perusing through the email, let me preface a couple things so everybody has a base of where we're starting from and where Paul's coming from his standpoint. Because looking at it from the outside, looking in, I can understand the questions he's asking. Number one, we're talking about a machine shop type company, whatever that is, doesn't really matter. $20 million annual revenue. Pretty good size, about 130 employees, around 35 to 40 computers. Okay. Mostly front office and road warriors, a lot of laptops, right? 5 sites around Ohio, all within a 2-hour drive. I'm assuming from where you're at, Paul. And main site here in town where he's at is about 70 people and 15 to 20 of the users. So there is somebody at the company, an engineer basically, that is taking care of the IT needs from what I can understand, and also their line of business software.
Correct.
Yeah. One of the things that you had said, they want him to be an engineer and kind of want to offload some of the stuff from him onto you, which I think is a perfect scenario in this particular case. One of the comments you made in the email was he won't let go of the line of business software yet, and that's okay with me, and it should be. Nobody out there anywhere should be handling the line of business software other than installing it and configuring it. When it comes to taking care of that stuff, you need to have a contract with the company that does the line of business software.
I would think that would be like a dream scenario, that if I could come in and somebody else will handle the line of business while I do everything else to start. All right.
Well, it truly seems to be an ideal situation for me to walk in. Their current scenario is the engineer he's a smart guy. He's put an NSA 4200 or something like that. It's a huge sonic wall in front of the main office. And that saved their butt. Tremendously saved their butt. They've got, there's no standardization in the entire shop. You know, they don't have any idea. Some folks are running Office 2013, 2010. There's mostly Lenovo boxes and whatever crap Lenovo puts on their machines when they first drop it in the shop. And this is the kind of stuff these guys are dealing with. So what I'm looking at is eventually, and I don't know, do I want to get into an all-you-can-eat model? I really don't know if I buy off on that. And John, you seem to make that work for you, and bless your heart. I'm not sure if I'm there or not. I'm looking more toward a hybrid model. But when these people start calling for help, they call on the engineer. The engineer is doing engineer stuff, or the engineer's busy with whatever else. He'll get to it when he gets to it. So as far as responsiveness, I've got them hands down. I mean, there's so many things I can log in remote, fix a little thing here and there, no big deal. The bigger issues, from a break fix perspective, it's easy money. But moving further down the road, I'd like to see, for example, every shop have one unified anti-malware solution. You know, right now they've got whatever trial came on the machine, and that's what they have. They might have Norton, they might have McAfee, they might have Malwarebytes, they might have something that somebody else put on it. There's absolutely no standardization whatsoever. So I'm looking at coming in and sort of starting that, and then kind of working my way into, you know, hey, I'm your nerd. Thoughts?
Well, I think you're getting a perfect scenario to pick up a client this size. I agree with you more than 1,000% that standardization on Altlands, remote offices and everywhere saves a lot of time and money in the long run. And if you can convince is not the right word, but inform the business owner about that, I think they'll buy in over time. And just as you impress upon them and start performing your work, and as issues dissipate and go down and down or reduce, you know, I think that'll be an easy sell. You also have a nice scenario there where you have somebody on site that knows where all the bodies are buried, as far as if there is a problem with the network or something like that. At least this engineer is there to probably answer some questions for you, so you don't need to totally start from scratch or figure it out. So that's also an asset, in my opinion. As long as there's not some sort of political pushback from him, you know, where the president tells him to help you, but he's not very interested. I mean, that scenario could happen. But again, you might find an engineer who doesn't want to mess with the break fix stuff and only wants to deal with the stuff he considers fun or the engineering. So you might be walking into something there. Now, to your point on all you can eat, you know, there's three ways to look at this. I mean, obviously all you can eat, that's what I do, but I would not tell anybody that's the perfect fit for everything. You can price it per employee. You could price it per endpoint or computer and server, or you might just say, let's do some retainer billing where we'll do, just guarantee me this many hours a month to start, and that'll be a nice check for you. You give them a little reduced price on the hourly. You can figure out whether you want to roll those hours over or not. There's a lot of debate on that. And then if they're exceeding that, you know, charge them your regular rate above that. And if that continues, move your block up from 10 hours a month to 15 hours a month to whatever it takes. And then maybe at some point, as this engineer transitions totally out of the picture, then perhaps you could go to some sort of flat fee billing for all of the shops. But and the other thing I would get to on that pricing is, you know, a 2-hour drive is a pretty good drive. So I might say to them, if they're going to be on retainer, yeah, we'll cover all that under retainer, but at least get some sort of mileage or something to drive to those other locations, some sort of billing.
I am really going to though reiterate with John that you're absolutely right. It's not always the best case scenario to have that all you can eat. And especially since this is the first time that you've taken on a client like this, you don't really know what to expect as far as volume, right? With that engineer being that go-between. So, I mean, it's not like you couldn't offer that to them later on once you kind of have a feel for what they're going to need. Personally, I'd be looking at having them buy hour blocks with rollovers. Buy an 8-hour block, and we'll keep buying 8-hour blocks every time you run out.
And I like the idea where Paul's going with on, getting some tools in place. This might be a great place to start with getting your tools up. If you could start with Ninja with a 40 user block of computers, I think that gets you to a good pricing bracket right out of the box. I'm not sure. And then maybe try to set some standards for your business. maybe choose Webroot, which works very nice with Ninja, mm-hmm. or Malwarebytes or something like that. And then you can start defining your standards that way, how you want to communicate with them for support, meaning tell them the best way to get a hold of me is email first. Just send me an email, copy the engineer so he's in the know, and then move on or graduate to a ticketing system right now if you feel that's something you might need moving forward. And then once you get in there, and I think once you start breaking and fix, they start breaking and you start fixing is when I think you really start identifying the major pain points on what's going on. Because I would be willing to bet from the way that you're explaining them now that the engineer has things kind of going his way, but he's not watching the little things, and that management really has no idea what the users are complaining about. And that's not to pick on them. It's just usually the way things are.
Yeah. What's really exciting about this, too, is this really gives you that opportunity to figure out, reporting. How you're going to handle reporting so that management is aware of what type of tickets you're taking. It's starting to document processes, because if you take on more clients like this, this is when, you need to start thinking about whether or not you either just want to partner with other people or possibly, 3, 4, 5, 6 contracts in, whether you need to start bringing on more people. So documentation early on is going to be really important for the extra people that you have to bring in to help support these clients.
And from my standpoint, if I was looking at this company and I wanted to go in and take a company of this size in the scenario that you're in, Paul, I would look at it from kind of what these guys have been saying, but almost a hybrid approach of, hey, let's start with the standardization of antivirus. Let's start with remote monitoring and management. Those are two easy things to put in place and to be able to use. And then over time, as you're fixing these little issues and they're getting quicker response from you, because you're able to go in there and fix a problem or even see a problem before it becomes a real problem and fix those things, then you kind of show your worth. You can still charge an hourly rate outside of that. You charge them a smaller rate for the remote monitoring and management in the antivirus and stuff like that. But because one of the things, questions you asked was talking about maybe starting off simply like that and then having some add-ons down the road. And I think that's what kind of everybody's saying here is that you could add on things down the road as you see more and more what is needed in that business.
I also think you have an opportunity to set expectations right out of the gate with this customer. I think their expectations are their perceived quality of the service they're receiving now. It sounds like it's pretty low. So, if depending on, I'll call it an SLA, that's a little bit more formal than I do. But if you tell them I try to get back to you in at least, 4 hours or faster during the day, if you have a problem at another location, I'll be there next day or better, or, it's set your pricing accordingly based on the demands that you're promising. But the other thing you want to do is set the expectation at the beginning that maybe some of the changes you're going to make might actually, I don't want to say break things at the beginning, but, you're going to put in a managed antivirus, which is definitely going to find things that they're not finding now, which may cause issues with stuff that they're using. So you're going to want to define that at the beginning. I would also be willing to bet that the systems are not patched either with Windows or the other third-party programs. So, keep in mind, patching can often break things, but the idea is that we want to get you to a baseline which we might have a little bit of pain on the beginning, but I'll be here to hold your hand and make sure we get it through quickly. So price that accordingly, you know, knowing that those problems might come. And then after that, say, you know, we might have an uptick, then we're going to come back down to a base level, and then we'll just have a straight line and we'll start working on improvements. And once we get there, we can start offloading more and more and more from that engineer to me. But we don't have to do it all at once, because we don't want to break the business as we're moving forward.
And Paul, so when you're looking at this business, what are some of the other things that are kind of creeping in your mind of things that you might need to deal with that maybe you are not prepared for, or you're trying to get prepared for ahead of time?
Honestly, the biggest thing is underpricing, frankly. I've taken a lot of what Chris says to heart. And Chris, when it comes to heart, sometimes I look at you and I think you have a little tiny black one, because your first thing right out of the chute, your response is raise your price. And you know what? I've actually told some competitors that, and bless them, they're doing well. I'm not taking my advice quite as much. I think the whole Dunning, the Dunning study or something like that, that talked about competence and confidence and all that good jazz. And those of us that really know what we don't know, we kind of put ourselves at a disadvantage, because we look at something and we think, well, gee, I don't know if I can do that so much. And then the next guy comes in and says, yeah, man, $428, we got it done. And I clean up their mess, you know, at $200. So part of my concern is underpricing, and frankly, putting myself in a position where I'm beating my head against the wall and not being able to continue to provide the service that they really truly need and want and honestly can afford. Time, no problems on time. Like you said, their current service level is, you know, whenever I get around to it. And if he's gone somewhere, that means they may not be able to print for 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 days. And that can be a problem, you know, with accounting. And the size. I don't think I'm ready to jump in there and say, you need a new switch and you need this, that, and the other thing. They kind of are rolling. And I think this may be an ideal scenario, like John said, and Chris has mentioned, and you, to sort of sneak in, kind of put my toe in the water and say, you know what, let's do some little things like, and I'm hearing some things that validate me actually. And I'm pretty tickled. Let's standardize on, ImsaSoft or Malwarebytes or whatever is tickling me at the moment. And once we get that, okay, let's inventory and make sure we know how many Office 2013 licenses we're using. Let's figure out, you know, we got 6 people on Vista. We need to move those up. We got a few people on XP. Those need to move out, et cetera, et cetera. So little things, I think, is kind of the way to get in here. And I'm honestly hearing some validation from you guys. I think I'm kind of on the right track. I think
you brought up a great example, Paul, with your printing issue. If they can't print for 4 to 6 days, I mean, I think your investigation will bear that out. What I would probably suggest they're going to find is somebody's trying to print to another printer connected to a computer via USB cable. That computer's off, or the print services is stopped. So that's when you can step in and make your recommendation of, well, why aren't we putting in some sort of laser printer that has its own NIC in it so that we can not worry about this sort of thing? And look, we solved that problem for $200, and that problem just never happens again. So I think this is an opportunity. I don't want to say made in heaven. That makes it sound a little bit, but I think you have the
it's
opportunity.
It's pretty sweet.
To step into something. It's pretty sweet. I mean, yeah. I mean, to expose yourself to a couple of things, and I'm not trying to say anything negative, but now you can expose yourself to some bigger clientele, basically doing exactly what you're doing now, break fix in a break fix capacity. Take more and more of that as you want it, and you know, as you provide good service, or maybe even step away and say, if they try to engage you more, but you decide you don't like that, you can say, well, no, I'm going to stop here. Why don't I just take care of your break fix? And maybe you can hand off other things to somebody else in the Podnuts community. Or, I mean, there's just a lot of neat options with the scenario that you've laid out here.
Now, going back to what you were saying on pricing, Paul, what are some of the things that you were thinking about as far as pricing? Because you said you don't want to go down too low, and we know Chris has no heart, and he just charges everybody a bazillion dollars.
That's right.
But what, in your mind's eye, what are you looking at? And not only that, what's going to be feasible for this company? Because I don't think you're going to be able to do everything all at once like these guys have been saying. It's probably going to take time, and it's going to be a little bit at a time. But you're already doing the break fix stuff anyway, so it's kind of a win-win, really. But what were the prices you were thinking about?
Well, here's an interesting thought on pricing. I look at a lot of the managed service provider type stuff, and when I read on some of the forums and that, I see people that are squawking and carrying on about an endpoint price of, you know, $399. Or $299, you know, for less than $5 for an endpoint. And then they turn around and say, well, I charge people, you know, $40 an endpoint or $120 an endpoint, et cetera.
Oh.
And I'm looking at that.
You guys know what the average price per month MSP?
Any idea.
The average price per desktop per month for ongoing desktop support and maintenance is $52 a month.
Yep.
That's the average?
Yeah.
Average.
Yep.
Interesting.
Look, okay, so we got to remember, I don't want to say think about it like insurance, but it's the only thing that I can really draw a parallel to, right? So, yeah, let's say like I charge $59.99 per endpoint. That's what I charge. And when I'm charging that to somebody, they know that when an update comes out that screws everything up, I'm going to fix it. And they're not going to get billed extra for that. I'm the one that pushed out the update, so it's going to get fixed. You know, so there's a lot more to it than just how much are you paying per endpoint for the software. There's also what type of labor are you going to provide them on an ongoing basis, and what kind of a risk are you taking on as the IT professional that, you know, if you get yourself up to 1,500 endpoints in your system, you're like, yeah, that's great. Hopefully that didn't come across too bad. Yeah, that's great. You know, I'm getting all this money. And then you wind up spending 15 hours fixing a problem because a Windows update broke almost everything.
Well, agreed.
Well, that's one of the advantages to a la carte or, you know, single price point or whatever is customers don't. The way I sell myself on fixed rate pricing is you're paying me not to see me, and I'll take care of everything no matter what happens. Really. Because if you don't see me, that things are working. And then I try to engage with my customers on a quarterly basis, although that usually ends up to be about yearly based on what they want to commit to. But, you know, that's fine with me as long as things are going okay. With the scenario I think we're talking about and the way that I think Paul can step in, I think it could get to that point. You know, that's why we want to be careful at whatever price point you start at now that you're not too cheap, so that at some point you don't, when you want to maybe step into that fixed price point, that you don't have to say, well, suddenly my price has gone from $60 an hour to, you know, the equivalent of $180 under some sort of fixed budgeting. But a lot of options there.
Now, Chris, okay, I'm sorry, I'm just looking at the chat room, and it says, so you do the $59.99, and that's AV, patch management, and unlimited remote and on-site support?
Nope, that was wrong.
Okay, I was going to say, wait a minute, your heart just grew three times bigger.
No. That's remote and in-shop support.
In-shop support, okay.
I just went out of focus. That's weird. Something weird is going on with my camera. There we go. And then if they want on-site services as well, then I'll sell them a four-hour prepaid on-site ticket for $460. And when they run out of those 4 hours, they just buy another one.
Okay. All right. Very good. So, John, going back to what you had said earlier, you said the average price for this $52 for managed services, right?
And it's $156 per server.
Okay, so what do you get for $52? Keith Rose is asking in the chat room.
Ongoing desktop support and maintenance. It's not defined in the. I'll put the link in the show notes and all that, based on the report that was done of 435 MSPs to come up with this pricing. You know, and the average is went from 90 in Canada. The high price was 119 per endpoint.
Yep.
So, I mean, there are guys charging a lot of money.
Can I Can I say, though, that I actually know two of the companies that was charging $119, and they were actually putting, those were large contracts, and they were putting staff members on site for 8 hours a day to ensure that the contracts were being met with, like, ridiculous four-hour SLAs. Like, it was...
You I'm with you 100%. And I'm not going to argue with somebody if they say it's $10 a month for an employee. It all depends on what you're delivering for that $10 a month. It might be $10 a month just to make sure that we're doing some monitoring and patching. Thank you very much. That's it.
Yeah.
Right. If you want to do total desktop support, you might move into that $50, $60, and it might be shop or remote like you're doing. Again, just like you said, it might be $119 a month if that includes on-site.
It's funny because I was just talking to somebody earlier today, and it sounds like from what I've read, it sounds like the pricing, a lot of people will charge in their MSPs $75 to $150 per endpoint. And that's going to be varying things that they offer for that. That's why I was surprised at the $52. $52 seems low for some of the managed services out there.
I think that might have a lot to do, though, with the affordability and availability, because we speak English in this country.
Do you now?
Yeah, a little bit.
That's American.
I'm going to reset.
We have all these tools that are available for us to make it easier, faster, and cheaper to provide that support. You know, the services like NinjaRMM have really made it possible for one and two man shops to take on, you know, 500, 600 computers and charge a lower rate, because if you push out a rule to a group of companies, then it's done, right? So now you've taken care of five different companies because they all have the same support requirement, as an example. So you're not individually going to each computer or even individually going to each company anymore to push out a Windows update rule.
Well, the idea behind automation would be that you don't want to have to do any of it. So if you're putting in your monthly price and your RMM handles your patching and handles everything, you shouldn't have to do anything.
I was more thinking along the lines of putting in exceptions, right? So,
Right. I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm just saying that at a certain level, if you're using a product that works, this should just be what you bill and just get paid for, because it's just happening automatically.
Yeah.
Or automagically, I mean.
I'm still a little bit old school to the point where, you know, I have priority levels set up in my Ninja. So it's like, if it's a severe or important, it automatically installs, except for its servers and specific.
Absolutely.
We're not going to get into that. And then anything below that, I'm going through and manually clicking yes. But when I click yes, I'm clicking yes across the board. I'm not clicking yes. Right. So, you know, yes, there is.
I think that's our secret sauce. That's what, makes us who we are. That's your Carruthers Computers on Maven Group. That's our little secret sauce, or however we want to do that. And we all cherry pick off each other to get that done. Absolutely. Just think, you know, talking more about what Paul might be doing with this example is he might get in there and break fix. And obviously he doesn't want to have to roll a truck to do all this or do Windows updates. You know, he's going to want to be able to do remote. He's going to want to have some sort of tool that does this automatically. It just takes care of it so that,
right,
you know, he's just getting paid. Yeah, I guess is my little point.
Yeah, and as long as you're not in a position where, like, Java has to be at a certain version because they're using some outdated software. I think I heard Server 2008, so it's possible that they have production software that, you know, either Java can't be updated or .NET can't be updated or whatever. There might be something weird. But barring all of that, you're absolutely right. Every single update can automatically go out to everything, I would say, but the server. But John and I could debate that if you want to debate that later.
Absolutely.
And you can always roll back updates if you find out that, you know, KB blah 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 blocks such and such a process from working properly. You know, you can push out the uninstalls too. So yeah, you're absolutely right. It does make it a lot easier for them to get running on it.
In Paul's scenario, what if you were just going to do AV and remote monitoring and management and get this installed? Now, obviously, there's going to be some things. If you have Vista and XP computers, it might not work as well on some of those things. But if you were going to put in most of the systems that were in that particular office, what price point would you all start at?
Just for monitoring and maintenance, no labor included?
No labor included. Just up to, you know, it's going to do automatic updates, maybe third-party updates, antivirus, and a way to remote in.
Sure. And personally, for me, I'd be starting at $25 a month. That's just the monitoring and maintenance. It includes Webroot. You know, get TeamViewer installed on there, and then I'd really be pushing that 4-hour ticket. So how many devices was that? Do we remember?
About 50.
About 50. Okay. Because
35 to 40. Sorry.
Okay. Let's say 40 because Ninja doesn't care if it's a workstation or a server. It's the same price for the software. So I'm looking at $1,000 a month just to say, yep, I will know if something goes wrong. Call me if I don't see it.
I would approach it. My approach to that would be is I would charge a fixed fee per location is what I would put them to say, what did we say? We had 5 sites. So I might say a couple $100 per location, you know, and then just tech, and then everything over that. My normal, I would say something like my normal hourly rate would be $150 an hour, but why don't we do a block of 8 hours at $100 an hour? So we got $200 per site. That's going to cover all my costs for all my automation, plus a little bit maybe based on the computer counts we have here. I'm going to charge them mileage to get to those sites, plus we're going to bill them. We're going to have a block of time that they're going to prepay me for. And the details on that would be, how are you going to roll that over? If, you know, some people say that's a sin to roll over those hours to the next month. Some people say that looks good for the clients. The clients love that. So that'll be all decisions Paul would need to make on a base-to-base. But that's probably how I would do it. Not saying it's the right way, but.
So, Paul, where were you thinking about starting at when you started looking at this project as far as per endpoint? What were you thinking about charging off just off the top of your head?
Well, off the top of my head, I need to know exactly how many endpoints are to start with. So my first thought was a paid assessment. Let's go in there and find out what you guys have. Where is it? Normal rate on that's $140 an hour, and see how many printers are involved, how many machines are involved, where they are specifically, and kind of go from that point. At that point, it's sort of up in the air. Anywhere, some of my home clients are getting away with $15 an hour for the upper side of the Kabuto monitoring setup. Some of them are paying $25 for that. And, you know, when they call me and I can spend 5 minutes to fix something, I do that. And I'm thinking these guys can probably do not necessarily higher per endpoint, but a higher overall because they're getting sort of a different level of service. And they also, like John said, when they call, I kind of need to be available to them, at least let them know that somebody loves them and I'll be in touch at some point pretty soon, you know, not whenever I get around to it.
Do you want us to touch on what they're asking about in the chat?
Yeah, you can.
Sure. So questions are coming up, or statements, I guess, are coming up on how often you're charging, whether it be monthly or annual. I mean, we're really focusing on business here. Did you have any preferences on how you were going to look at whether you wanted to be monthly, quarterly? Like, what were you looking for?
Me?
Yeah, you're in the hot seat. It's all about you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Monthly. I'm in the break fix model, as you guys well know, it's feast or famine. I mean, and when it's feast, of course, you have the double-edged sword of not only are you busier than a one-legged paper hanger, but one-arm paper hanger, but it's getting from job to job to job is kind of tough unless you have an automation system involved. Go ahead.
So this probably won't be the case. I'm assuming that none of this is nonprofit or anything like that. The only thing that I would say, not intentionally. The only thing to watch out for is if you wind up with a client that decides, let's say it's a nonprofit or a charity, there's a very good possibility that they're really going to push for that quarterly billing. And I would really recommend that you don't shy away from that. There are a number of churches and charities and nonprofit organizations that I work with where they have to have 3 people sign the check after it goes through a quarterly meeting. And it has to follow under the quarterly budgeting. So I get a check from them every 3 months. So don't shy away from that. But monthly, I think would probably be the best way to go usually.
And don't forget when you do your inventory, depending on how you're pricing out, that you want to take into account things that you may not see when you do your inventory. And what I mean by that is like tablets, phones, that kind of stuff. That's why a lot of guys I know do per user pricing versus per endpoint pricing, because a user might have 3 or 4 devices that they're using, you know, where there only might be 1 endpoint in the shop. So just be aware of that if they're heavy, heavy mobile device users.
Now, do you have any idea if any of the computers or mobile devices that you're going to be expected to support are BYOD?
they all sound like BYOD to me.
It sure sounds that way, doesn't it? The actual computers are all ordered, you know, by the shop. The sales guys have laptops, and they're issued by the shop pretty much, but they're not maintained as though they're issued by the shop. They're just kind of handed to them and
go for broke. Here's your laptop, get out.
Pretty much, yeah.
Good luck.
And the phone's the same way. So
okay,
there's really no framework. Like I said, the guy's an engineer, and he's a darn good engineer. But I don't engineer, he don't IT. It's just kind of one of those things.
Well, I love the idea of doing an initial assessment. I think Jeff and I actually walked through that with the last business client he took on, and I think he got a ton out of that. We had a couple eye-openers when we were working on that together, as I seem to remember.
Oh, yeah.
So I think that's the best way to go. And even if things don't work out, I mean, you're giving them something of value, and obviously you're getting a couple bucks in return. So it's win-win for everybody.
And as far as the you know, the pricing, talking about, Chris was talking about quarterly, monthly, annually, it depends on a price point, because I'm looking at the chat room and I'm seeing that there's people that charge, maybe if they're only doing remote monitoring and management and an AV solution, and they're charging $15 per computer, they're going to do that on an annual basis, which is what I would recommend. My businesses, some of my actually, and even for residential, I usually charge annually. I'm just like, you know what? I don't want to bill more than once a year. And these aren't big enough. You know, we're talking about one computer or a handful of computers in a business, not a whole lot. So I don't want to charge monthly for that, because that puts more work on me. But if I had a situation like this where now we're talking about 30, 40 computers, then I might go to a month by month, or even a quarterly would probably be, you know, be all right for that.
Threw you right off there, didn't I?
Yeah. Well, you know, no, I was just thinking about the, you know, Paul talking about the initial assessment. Paul, I think you're talking right along the right lines. And I think the way you're thinking about this is good. And the questions you're asking are good. And you're getting an idea of what you can do kind of, and I hate to say this, but in baby steps, because most people, and I think that's the way John and Chris started off in this conversation, was they would look at 30, 40 computers right from the get-go, and they go, oh my gosh, that's a lot. But there's a lot of people in this business that's exactly how they cut their teeth into getting into business. They didn't pre-plan for 5 years in advance like Chris would. They just went and said, I'm going to jump off the cliff right now, and it's okay, I'll figure it out on the way down. That's what they did. So there's different ways of doing it, I guess, is my point.
I'm sorry, but no matter how many times those types of analogies are going to come up, I'm always going to have that bungee cord on first, man.
Well, there's nothing wrong with that. Hey, some people fly, some people fall. I don't know what to tell you. Anyways. So yeah, I think a lot of the things that you're thinking about are right along the right lines. And, is there anything else that you were thinking about though, Paul, as far as some other questions that maybe have come up that we haven't answered as of yet?
I think you've given me some starting points, and that's really kind of why I've come to you. I listen to you folks, not as regularly as I'd like to, but I kind of binge listen to you with the recordings, and I kind of have a feel for the different segments that you serve. And right now, I don't have the safety net that you do with a real job, so I really kind of have to make this work. But I'm not at a point like where John is, where he is doing all that on a monthly basis and it, you know, really has a real true business going with it. And Chris, I don't want to sound like a schoolgirl, but man, I have listened to you for quite some time and learned a tremendous amount of stuff from you. It's true from all of you, but you raise your prices. I love it. That's just the mantra, and you do it with integrity, and that tickles me, which is why I'm talking to you folks, because you folks, I have a lot of respect for, and you're kind of where I want to be in the near future.
And I'll say this real quick before Chris comes in and all gushing and everything. I think that this is exactly why we pull this information together, because the one thing that John will tell you all the time is, we, you know, the one thing we know is we don't know everything, and there's always something new to learn. And I think there's different things that I firmly believe this, any person that goes into this business. I don't care what anybody says. IT is not dead. There's always going to be companies out there, especially small, medium-sized businesses. They're going to need outside IT support. That's just the way it is. It's not changing anytime soon. If it does, I'll eat my shoe, but it's not going to happen. So I think from your standpoint, if you're doing this full time and this is something you can give your time and effort into, then you can make, quite honestly, as much money as you want, as long as you're willing to learn along the way and you're willing to do what it takes, sometimes uncomfortably, to get to the point where you want to get to in your business. And I firmly believe that. I don't care where you're at. I don't care where you're starting from. It does not matter. If you've got enough passion and you've got enough wanting to learn, you can make this business work for you. And for those of us that do part-time, it can become your full-time gig if you really want it to. For me, I don't really want it to, but that's a whole nother story. So I'm in a little different scenario. I have too much time invested in my job. But for a lot of people out there, to make this jump, they absolutely can do it. And you can do very well with it. So anyways.
Well, quick comment on Paul. I mean, first time on the show, bringing up, letting us pick on him. That's pretty sweet. So high five to Paul. Thanks for sharing. This is a great topic. The other thing is, Jeff, did you just say Chris tickles you?
I did not say Chris tickles me. That was Paul. Paul said Chris tickles. I don't know what that means. Don't want to know.
This is a family-friendly show.
Chris hasn't been on a show for weeks, and all of a sudden he comes back, and you know the guy with no heart gets the most love. I don't get it.
One of the things that I wanted to chat with you guys about and kind of put myself out in there for a target, perhaps. A few years ago, I had to take a motorcycle safety class so I could drive on post. And one of the first questions the guy had was, how much experience do you have riding motorcycles? And of course, a bunch of hands went up, and some of the old guys were like 15, 20 years. And my hand went up. I've been on a bike for about 3 years. And he says, do you have 3 years experience riding a bike? Or do you have 1 year experience riding a bike repeated 3 times?
Mm.
And you know, that was sort of an epiphany with me. And I look at some of the guys in the Brake Fix outfit and kind of where I'm at, and really honestly, listening to you folks over the last couple of years, I've realized that I don't really have a van necessarily. I'm a little higher priced than the Pizza Tech, but I'm starting to see myself doing the same thing over and over, and I'm not really progressing where I should be. You guys are, each one of you has a certain place in the step of where I want to be, and I can get there so much quicker by chatting with you folks.
Do you hear those footsteps in the background? I think that's Marvin running towards the show.
This is a van slide door.
Well, I appreciate you coming out and putting yourself out here, because I know it took a little coaxing, but you came through with flying colors. And again, were we really that hard on you, Paul?
Oh, absolutely not. You've been very nice. We'll see after the show how it works out.
Show, as far as show value, I mean, it's got to be a lot of questions guys are asking.
Exactly. And this is why we do the show, quite honestly, because everybody can learn something from somebody else. And this is where we pull the information together. And the people are asking the questions, and this is a great forum to be able to do that. So I really like that we kind of segued into a little bit different topic using a person this time instead of just a topic itself, and having that interaction. So this worked out real well, and I'm very happy with the end result. And Paul, I don't know, you're like a natural. So, all right, so let's go ahead and I think we can move on into, let's take another quick break, and then we'll move on into the next section. All right, our show today brought to you by Kubuto, a lightweight RMM built for residential MSPs that lets you easily monitor and manage devices, improve customer loyalty, and get more leads. Use Kubuto to sell residential managed services such as device monitoring, patch management, managed antivirus, and more. Kubuto detects issues for your clients and pops up a custom branded prompt so your customers can easily get in touch with you. You can easily manage your clients using the Kubuto online dashboard and add upgrades like managed antivirus and monitoring to clients' accounts. New to Kubuto is the ability to remotely access and control client devices with their latest module called Kubuto Live. which is now in open beta. This new module allows you to seamlessly transition from seeing a client's request for help to launching a remote session and providing solutions. Kabuto also integrates with various CRMs and PSAs to streamline your workflow. You can sign up for today for a free 30-day trial at repairtechsolutions.com/Kabuto. And that's K-A-B-U-T-O. Let's go ahead and I'd say let's answer some emails, but we don't have any emails this week.
What?
I think everybody has been on vacation for the last couple weeks, enjoying Thanksgiving away and whatnot. But while we have some mindless banter here, we have the ability to take some phone calls. Phone lines are open if somebody wants to add to the conversation or just maybe make a, ask a question or two. The call-in number is 1-888-697-0162.
You know, there's another possibility here.
In
that possibility is that while I was gone, you guys were so much more productive that nobody has any questions anymore.
Yeah, that's it.
The email we've been receiving, but we didn't want to say anything, Chris.
Right.
Okay.
Oh my gosh.
Viewership actually went down 20%, but I wasn't going to say anything.
Oh, really? Okay. I know that has nothing to do with me, but I'm going to take it anyway.
Well, you know, you came off this. So, Chris, let's go into what has been going on with you lately since we have an open forum right now, and we're going to let you add your 2 cents again.
Oh, man, a lot.
Listen, 4 cents at the most. That's all we want. Four cents. Yes.
Okay, so a bit of a change with my formatting on the show. I'm going to endeavor to be on the show at least once a month. I know that I haven't been around for a couple of... What?
4 sentences. I'm just keeping track.
Oh, okay. So that's a big thing. I know Jeff and I are going to do an interview. Jeff's going to interview me sometime, hopefully soon, so that we can go over some bigger updates that'll require a lot more time than what John's going to give me. And I am really enjoying this iced tea. That is not a paid endorsement.
Okay.
There's my fourth.
Well, apparently, because you covered the label of whatever it is. Sorry.
That was the intention.
It's in Canada. We can't get it here anyways. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, Canada sentences are different. So
For the one person in Canada that's watching right now, they might care.
Oh, wait. Should I have said sweet tea? What do you guys call it?
It depends on whether it's sweet or not. I don't know.
Because iced tea up here is sweet tea in most states.
Yeah, we call it iced tea, too. Iced tea, okay. Sweet tea.
Whatever.
It's cold tea. Well, it's cold tea. I don't know.
I just don't want to confuse anybody.
It's pronounced Red Bull. Jeez.
It's not like sweet tea. Like really sweet, southern sweet tea. That would be considered sweet tea. I don't know. Anyways. All right. Any other thoughts? So, Chris, you're going to endeavor to... So, Chris, for those that don't know... Chris has been on this show since pretty much the beginning of us doing a live show back, I think, since episode 95 or something like that. And we're on 258.
About that. Yeah. It's been a couple of years.
He's been around for a while. And so he's got some other things going on, and we will have a show talking about exactly some of the things that are going on in his business and some of the things that he's endeavoring to do and some of the changes in his own business. And then also, just to let you know, he's going to try to get on here on a semi-regular basis, but not on a weekly basis. So that's kind of where he's at right now. And then obviously we've got my stalwart co-host, John Dubinsky, who's my like right-hand man, even though he is a Marine. But we still love him for that.
I think did you just get a promotion or?
It varies week to week. Who the hell knows what's going on?
Exactly. Okay, you know, he moved up and, Chris moved out. He moved up. I don't know. It's all good. We all get together and share information from week to week.
And I do want to say too, that, I love being on this show. It sucked not being on here for a couple of weeks. And every time I'm here, there's always somebody else saying, oh, you guys have always done, great, or I've learned so many things from you guys, or you've definitely had an impact on my business. That was one of the things that came up in the chat today. And, you know, that's why we're all here, right? That's why I'm here. That's why Jeff puts as much work as he does into it. So, just tossing it out there, if you're watching this on YouTube, hit that like button if you're liking what's going on, because I think that Jeff likes seeing those little thumbs ups.
And also, so I don't have to have mayonnaise sandwiches next year for Thanksgiving, can you please go to patreon.com/podnuts and make a small donation?
Oh, man.
What's wrong with mayonnaise?
Nothing. Nothing's wrong with mayonnaise. I just, yeah. I, you know, like I said, everybody has their price, and money speaks louder than anything else that you can give me.
So as long as I'm giving you a dollar a month, you'll leave me alone? Is that what that's?
Yes. Yes, we will. We can be bought for $1 per month.
This has become blackmail. So just like, this is just flat out blackmail at this point. Everybody go give a dollar and John won't email you.
We're going to take another quick break, and then we'll see if we get any phone calls or anything like that. Or if you have any questions in the chat room, feel free to ask. This is the time. This is the open forum right now. We can take questions from various different things. But speaking of, if you want to support this show and give a little love my way, yes, money speaks love to me. That's just the way it is. You can go to patreon.com/computer repair podcast. And I want to thank all of our Patreon supporters for your continued support. You guys are doing phenomenal, and we really appreciate it. Yes, and you also, there is two Patreon accounts. There's one for Podnuts itself. And if you want, you can go over there and support them too, because they are the ones that bring all this stuff together and put it all in one place where you can enjoy it, subscribe to it, and get a lot out of it. There's a lot of other shows on the Podnuts Network that you can check out for various different things, anything from Android to books. And you can go ahead and check those out and get all the information you want for free. And for those that feel like they want to support, then go ahead and, you know, send a couple bucks our way. We definitely appreciate it. And hopefully in down the road, we've got some more things cooking up. Right now, if you give to this show in particular, I will add you to the secret Facebook group for the Computer Repair Podcast. And you can get in there and you can ask these questions like Paul's been asking us. And we hopefully can come together and answer some of these questions. We want a safe haven where there are no dumb questions. There are no silly answers. We laugh a lot. And hopefully what I will do in the future when I have a little bit more time is I want to do some maybe live Facebook videos for that particular group. So maybe there we can have an open forum where people can ask questions on the fly, or we just talk about some subjects that people want to talk about.
Are you talking about the Computer Repair Podcast Patreon? What are we at per show for that right now? Do you recall?
$34.75.
All right. Okay. I'll make a commitment here. I'll go out on a limb. Hang on.
Hold on. Wait, not anymore. Because now it's 26 people giving $35 because we were just talking about it.
All right. So if that goes to $40 per show, I'll join Facebook.
Oh,
what?
Oh, that's huge, folks. That is huge. If you want access, front row access to John Dubinsky, you can go to patreon.com/computer repair podcast. And it doesn't matter what you give, as long as you give something, and you will have access to the secret Facebook group where you will see John on Facebook. Now, you can't find John anywhere on Facebook because he does not have his account open right now. But for $40 an episode, he will open that account and go into that Facebook group and be semi-available.
I honestly thought that John wasn't on Facebook at all.
I'm not.
He's not. That's,
yeah.
I don't even have an account.
That's why we're throwing it out there. So
I'll make that commitment.
Just remember, this call is being recorded for quality and training purposes.
No, we're not live now, are we?
we're always live. Live and in color. All right, so I think we'll go ahead and end off this show, because I think we've shared a lot of great information. And also, for those that want different things on this on the show, you know, you can obviously email us and we can, you know, take those emails. And if you want a topic that's talked about, we can go ahead and do that. Or Paul had a big loaded question, and we decided to bring him on the show so that we could answer it in an open forum where everybody could learn. And that's why we're here. So let's start with Mr. Paul. And Paul, where can people find you at on the great internet or interwebs?
Yes, on the interwebs, you can find me best as email, and I'm going to be pj17 at keys, K-E-Y-E-S, computer.com.
Awesome.
My websites are in a state of limbo, so no good yet.
Okay. Well, I appreciate you coming out and opening yourself up and sharing. It really was awesome.
I learned a lot. Thank you all so much.
No problem.
Thanks for the push, John. I appreciate the... I asked John, and he kept going, well, yeah, that'd be a great episode, man. We should put it on the
air. And it was, Paul. Thank you, man.
Yep.
I appreciate you taking a leap. And I mean, you got to be back on the show now. You were great.
Yep. Awesome. Yeah, definitely. All right, Mr. Chris Carruthers, let people know where they can find you at nowadays.
Sure. Well, nowadays, you can find me on Facebook and just about every group that everybody's added me into. You can go to our website at Carruthers-computers.com. I'll make sure that Jeff has that for the show notes. Or you can email me at chris@Carruthers-computers.com.
Awesome. Appreciate you coming back out and looking forward to hearing more of what's going on in your life. And Mr. John Dubinsky, where can people find you at?
Is that face-book.com or just?
That's the Facebook, for those that don't know. The Facebook.
Right.
John, I'm Maven Group. Thanks to everybody for chatting with me.
Awesome. Or the Book Face or Foxfire or whatever. Yeah. Anyways, all right, come join us for the Computer Repair Podcast every Sunday at 4 p.m. Eastern over at podnets.com/Computer Repair Podcast Live. Join in on the conversation by calling in live and hanging out in the chat room. You can send an email to podnets@podnets.com or leave a voicemail at 1-888-697-0162. We have audio available over at podnets.com or subscribe using your favorite podcatcher. You can be notified when the show is live by subscribing to our YouTube channel, Computer Repair Podcast. I want to thank everyone for listening and subscribing to the show. We'll see you next time on the Computer Repair Podcast.